This is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. The longest off-season in international football officially ends this evening with the A-League kicking off. We'll have all that covered, and of course the Socceroos have got a result against Saudi Arabia. We're chock-a-block tonight, and to get us started, John Cosmina will join Mark Van Aken with First Edition News in a minute. We'll follow that with Simon Hill on the line to go through the local reaction in Jeddah and look ahead to Tuesday night's game against Japan. Then our man Dean Hennessy will take a look at the opening rounds action in the A-League, and we'll also be making our long-range forecasts on how the season will play out for the time capsule before we wrap up the first hour with the man who's got the biggest job in the A-League, head of that competition, Greg O'Rourke, to give us the view on expansion from the head office in Box to Box's contribution to a story that's been bubbling along for quite a while now. And in the second hour, as always, we'll kick off with second edition news before a mate of Box to Box, Ernie Merrick, returns to look at the season ahead for his side, which is going to get underway with four of his biggest names on an all-whites tour of the US. Then Dino back to talk Europe rather than the scandal. We're just going to talk football, Sam Allardyce, his history, and then again, stoppage time at the very edge. It's an absolutely cracking show tonight. Let's get it right underway because we've got your mate Cozzy on the line.
G'day, Cozzy. Welcome aboard to Box, and I think we were talking just before you jumped on air about we could look at this game both ways. 2-1 up late in the game, and then a goal to get a point. It still has us top of the table. But what's your initial thoughts of how the game played out, and should we happy or a little bit disappointed that we didn't get the win?
Look, once you get a lead and you concede and lose that lead, then obviously you've got some cause for disappointment. But you know, look at it over 90 minutes, and the Aussies went down to a good goal constructed by the Saudis after 5 minutes. It probably could have been defended a little bit better. And there's a lot of stuff that will come out of this game that Andrew will want to have a look at to fix up before Tuesday night against Japan. But look, over the 90 minutes, given the quality of the opposition, I think you've got to look at it and say, you know, it's a good point away from home in very tough circumstances. You know, there's a massive crowd there, all on the side of the opposition, obviously, and the weather conditions, you know, made it very, very tough for the Australians to play. So, you know, they played the UAE a few weeks ago in similar circumstances, and you look at it, you got 4 points out of those two games. And with, I guess, the bonus that the Middle Eastern teams do tend to struggle when they come to Australia, and we've got that to look forward to in the second round. So I don't think there's too much to complain about.
It's interesting, isn't it, Cozzy? But I guess the philosopher in all of us says, yeah, okay, a point on the road. Yeah, it's very simple. Win at home, get a point on the road, and you're genuinely going to be pretty happy with yourself. But Ange doesn't have that mentality. Ange would be unhappy with the result, basically. He wants to win every single game, even made the moves late in the game to try and get the winner. So, look, there's a definite shift, I guess, in the mindset of Ange and, I guess, then by extension, the Socceroos squad.
Yeah, look, Ange has always been on the front foot. That's the way he wants to play. He wants the team to think that way, and they do because, you know, the interviews on Fox after the game, the players were really annoyed with themselves for having taken a lead and then lost it. And that's a good way to be. And I know you mentioned the philosopher and all of us. It'd be great if you could win every game in a World Cup qualifying campaign.
For sure.
And you've got to go out with that mindset. But realistically, are you capable of it? You know, and you know, give fair play to the Saudis because they actually played some good football. We need to give them credit. Years ago, they were good footballers, but they would never last. Well, they weren't consistent over 90 minutes. This team, to me, and I thought, you know, it wouldn't be easy for the Aussies, but I thought we would win relatively comfortably. They stayed with us, and at times in that game, they beat us at our own game. They put us under pressure. They dominated possession. They had us on the back foot. If you look at the second goal that the Saudis scored, we had 6 or 7 yellow shirts behind the ball, you know, between the penalty area, the penalty spot and the 6-yard box. So they had us defending. So look, the football world's got closer together. They're going to come closer to Australia, and they've done a good job. And yeah, the mindset's great for the Aussies, but you know, take the point and be happy with it, and think about Tuesday night. Now you've got to put that behind you and Japan's a massive game now.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to John Cosmina about the Socceroos result last night against, or early yesterday morning, against Saudi Arabia. Now, Cosy, you covered the game for Fox Sports. We've got Simon Hill on after the break to talk to us from Saudi Arabia. But before we get into that Japan game you just referred to, this is a real rivalry beginning to build. The Saudis and a lot of the Middle Eastern teams resent Australia's joining Asia, and the locals in the crowd certainly gave a fair indication of that in terms of the way they support their own team and vehemently barrack against our mob.
Yeah, that's what you'd expect. You know, I look at I think the way football's progressed in the Middle East as well. You know, years ago you would have played a game like that in an empty stadium. I remember going to Kuwait for a World Cup qualifier in 1977. That's a long time ago. And I think there were more players than supporters. So, you know, the football's come a long way, and you want those rivalries. I know a lot of teams are maybe annoyed that Australia are in Asia, but we are in Asia. It's as simple as that. We're as much a part of Asia as anybody else is. We have a different cultural background, but it's got nothing to do with how we are located geographically. So, you know, it's good that you get this little bit of angst between countries. It's what football's about.
Cosy, Tuesday night becomes a huge game because in our group, because Iraq and Thailand are not performing well, effectively the top four teams now are all jostling for those two top spots. And although we're top of the table, UAE in fourth spot is only 1 point behind us and one goal behind us in goal difference. So effectively it's very close. What about the team? I mean, Ange is... over these international games where we have two games in quick succession, he often uses his squad. Do you expect some changes in team selection for Tuesday night?
I don't know who you would change. I think overall the team probably did okay. He might look to tighten things up a little bit in midfield and maybe look at Mark Milligan resuming his role in the midfield. For me, Tommy Rogic... pretty comfortable first half, but he disappeared in the second. And that had probably as much to do with the way that the Saudis set up as well. So you might look at playing with not two sixes, but say Mille Yednak and Mark Milligan, because Millsy's actually not bad when he gets forward as well. He's got a few goals for the team. Aaron Moy was quiet tonight. So would you look at Moy just playing as a 10? And rotating Milligan and Moy in that sort of role. There's been talk of Timmy Cahill starting, but I can't see it. Historically, against the Japanese, you know, I remember a game in Japan in the last World Cup qualifying campaign, and Timmy played up front. He was a lone ranger. They pinned us right back. I don't think that's Tim's game, and I don't know if he's ready to start. Certainly off the bench in his new home city might be an option, but I can't really see who else you could change.
In terms of Tom Rogic, Cosy, he's obviously an immense talent. He's kicking butt over there with Celtic at the moment. There's just a question, and you talked about it, he faded in the second half this morning. Is there a question over just his engine? He's obviously come from that futsal background. He only ever seems to have an hour in him.
Yeah, look, I think Tommy, everyone's recognised that, and it's been talked about that Norsey, but I think he is getting a lot more match minutes in Scotland now with Celtic. He's becoming an integral part of that squad. It's just the nature of the beast. It's how Tom is. You can't change what his background is now. What you need to do is look at how you can improve him as time goes on. He's still got time on his side in terms of his age to develop, I guess, that kind of conditioning, but he's missed out on a fair bit of it because he didn't do a lot of the big field football when he was a younger player. As you said, he was an indoor player.
Well, Cosy, thanks so much, mate, for joining us. Your analysis is always spot on, and we look forward to talking to you again soon, mate. Hopefully we'll get a result against Japan and get not just one foot, but perhaps both feet on the plane to Russia in 2018.
Would be good, wouldn't it?
It sure would, mate. Four times in a row, that's what we want to see. After the break, Simon Hill is going to continue this conversation around the Socceroos. That's after the break on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
they're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We've talked to John Cosmina and broken down the Socceroos match against Saudi Arabia, but Simon Hill is the voice of football in Australia. He called that game. He's going to call the Japan game, and it's also on the eve of the A-League kickoff. So we've got Simon on to chat about all those things. Welcome back to the show, mate.
Pleasure to be with you.
So, mate, as we said, we've analysed the game itself with Cozzy, but in terms of a group position, look, it could have been perfect, but it's still a pretty good outcome considering the goal in the first 5 minutes of the match.
Look, absolutely, you know, particularly bearing in mind the conditions as well, because it was, you know, very warm and humid in Jeddah, so I think the Socceroos can be, you know, reasonably pleased with their efforts. I don't think they were at their fluent best today in some patches of the game, but you know, a point away from home in those conditions is pretty good. It puts them joint top, obviously, with Saudi Arabia as well, and a big game to come against Japan in Melbourne on Tuesday. And they only just, you know, squeaked home against Iraq with a goal in the 5th minute of stoppage time. So I don't think Japan are particularly at their best at the moment. So, you know, they're there for the taking, really, for Australia. If they can get over the line on Tuesday on home soil, where conditions are a lot more familiar, then, you know, they'll be well on their way to Russia.
So just to complete the conversation on that that match in Saudi, you know, you did refer in your commentary about, you know, some of the resentments. We touched on this with Cozzy as well. But this is a real building rivalry for Australia. Some of the Middle Eastern teams are really starting to get jack of Australia, taking what they perceived to be one of their spots underlined in the World Cup. And Saudi Arabia, as you mentioned, have probably been the greatest... what's the opposite of beneficiary? When
loser.
Yes. Of the discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think that's certainly part of it. I think that there's one or two other things sort of bubbling away underneath the surface as well. Obviously, the Asian Champions League final of 2014 was a very contentious match in not just the spat between Al Shamrani and Spiranovic, which was bad enough, but the fact that really that they had three clear-cut penalties that weren't awarded. So they felt very hard done by Al Hilal. That was a club side, of course, not the national team. So there's a bit of resentment there brewing from that game as well. Australia played Saudi Arabia before in World Cup qualifiers, beating them home and away. They didn't like that because they used to qualify in through Asia. And I think the other thing that's probably not been picked up on too much in Australia over the last few days is that Ange did a press conference in Saudi where I'm told he was... or at least came across as being a little bit arrogant. Now, to be honest, I've noticed this a little bit with Ange over the last few Socceroos internationals. Now, I'm not going so far as to call it arrogance, but it's certainly uber confidence. And he doesn't like any questions that question whether they're going to win or not. I remember when we were in the UAE, a local journalist, and obviously he was speaking through, you know, a bit of broken English as well, that you have to take into account, basically said to him, would a point be a good result here, given the conditions, because it was stinking hot? And Ange said, no. And that was the only answer he gave. And there is just a little hint of cockiness about, you know, the way that Ange approaches those press conferences. Now, I'm choosing my words carefully, as you'll yes. hear, because I don't want to accuse him of arrogance, because I like Ange. And I think what he's done for the national team is fantastic. And I think he deserves to be confident. But he's just got to be a little bit careful at times not to cross that line. Because if we're being brutally honest, we're not that popular in Asia, certainly in the Middle East part of Asia anyway. They don't particularly like us. They don't think we belong in Asia. So we do have to be maybe a little bit more respectful.
Diplomatic.
Diplomatic. That's the word that we need to be. And I just think over the last few months, maybe it's a policy decision that he's taken and he wants to, you know, go a different way. Certainly in his early years with the Socceroos, Ange was very respectful, always very humble when he went overseas. That's certainly changed over the last few months. And I don't think the Middle Eastern countries in particular like it very much. So, we have to be careful.
It's a very interesting point you make, and we have picked up on that as well, Simon. We actually had Ange on the show last week, and we talked to him about the importance that he placed on being assertive and wanting to win. And but you know, football is a political game as well. I mean, and Australia's position in Asia, we should never take that for granted. And obviously, you know, the politics plays out in varied ways, especially in the Middle East. So the point you make is really interesting. But it seems to me that UAE press conference that you refer to, which I picked up on as well, seems to be a bit of a line in the sand for him, where he's going forward and you know, he's expecting to win in difficult conditions away from home, and he wants to set the standard. So I have detected a real shift in his approach over the last couple of months.
Yeah, and look, wanting to win, being confident, all the rest of it, that's fine. I have no problem with that. We expect them to win most of the games, let's be honest. They are the Asian champions after all. But Ange's sort of got on this sort of little tracker where he feels that perhaps Australia doesn't get enough respect at home. Well, look, that may be true in terms of the general population that, you know, let's be honest, still doesn't have football as its first love. But, you know, certainly amongst the football media, Ange gets a huge amount of respect. You know, we've loved what he's done with the national team. It's been fantastic. And he continues to drive the game forward. But I know he's trying to get a message across. I understand in many ways what he's trying to do. But as you've pointed out, politically, our spot in Asia, you know, has never been guaranteed. And we do have to be a little bit careful. Otherwise, we come across as being cocky, arrogant Australians. And, you know, we're not the most popular country in that region as it is. So, yeah, FFA, I'd be just having a quiet word and saying, look, just tone it down a little bit. You can still be confident and expect to win, but sometimes the body language could do with being a little bit more open and respectful, I think.
Exactly.
That's only my take on it, by the way.
Yeah, look, I think we all share that opinion, mate. Look, the Middle Eastern countries, the Asian countries, they don't like to be condescended to, and that's the take that we're sort of all drawing from this, and hopefully Ange will pick up on that and someone will tap you on the shoulder, mate. So, look, we've talked Socceroos. The A-League kicks off tonight. We set it up as one of the most anticipated A-League competitions, you know, in recent history. There's a lot of discussion about expansion and growth and TV rights deal. You must be pretty excited about what we've got coming, mate.
Yeah, can't wait for it. You know, we have one of the longest off seasons in the world in Australia, so when it comes around, you're absolutely ravenous for football, and I certainly am. I can't wait for it. We kick off tonight, Roar against the Victory, which is a big game up at Suncorp, and of course we've got the big Sydney Derby in front of a crowd of, well, it's anticipated to be over 60,000 tomorrow, so you know that will smash all A-League records, and then we follow that up next week with the Melbourne Derby, so. Timmy Cahill's debut and all. So, yeah, we can't complain. There are a few things obviously bubbling along under the surface about promotion, relegation, expansion, second divisions, all that sort of stuff. And they're good conversations for us to be having because, you know, it's time for us to move in that direction, quite frankly. And the sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we do a regular A-League spot in our show with Dean Hennessy, and we've actually
good old Dino.
Yeah, Dino, we're actually going to put in the time capsule some predictions, Simon. So we're going to put you on the spot. We're just going to rattle through these, and we'll put your predictions in the time capsule with ours.
Okay.
Who's going to win the Premier's Plate? End of season, top of the league.
Premier's Plate, Sydney FC.
Okay, and the grand final.
Grand final, Melbourne Victory.
There you go. What about top goal scorer?
Bessart Berisha.
And the player of the season?
Player of the season.
Dean's writing these down, by the way.
Blimey, that's a tough one. Reece Williams.
Well, there you go. That's a good one.
Absolutely.
Dean's shaking his head. He doesn't think so.
Hey, Simon, mate, look, it's always fantastic to have you on the show. As we said, you are the voice of football in this country and a highly respected one at that, mate. Always, mate. Thanks again, mate, and a big A-League season ahead, and we'll see you in Melbourne on Tuesday night.
Pleasure, guys. Looking forward to it.
After that break, that man we referred to, Dean Hennessy, he's going to come in to go through that A-League round, and we're going to go through it in detail, and we're going to put our predictions into the time capsule, the box-to-box ones, coming up next.
Box-to-box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also find us on boxtoboxnts.com.au, which is the home of all of our podcasts. Now, one of the most anticipated seasons in the history of the A-League kicks off in a little over an hour. To go through it all, our former Notts County man, 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, and Hume City coach Dean Hennessy. We've been waiting for this.
It's back.
Yeah, it's back. Now, mate, we're going to go through our normal setup after this week where we briefly preview each game and then have a feature match. But because we've got so much to get through today, we'll just go through every game in detail.
Yeah, I think it was most probably the best way to approach it, with obviously all the games, you know, brand new. All the teams are new, even if there's only one or two changes, which very rarely happens in football, there's many changes. But I think, you know, on its merit, we really don't know, and we're going to predict it by the end of this little segment of where everyone will finish. But at least we'll have, you know, give due diligence to each and every each team in the league.
So you've done your homework on your predictions?
I have done my homework on my predictions. Have you, Rob?
Of course I have, mate.
Well, let's do these. We'll do the predictions last.
Yeah, we'll do those last.
Yeah. So go, Dino. First game, Brisbane Roar and Melbourne Victory, kicking off the season tonight. Can't wait. The best thing about the A-League off-season, because it's so long, and then it comes straight after all of the giggle season in NRL and AFL, is that it feels like it's a long time, that all of a sudden it's here. And today it's here. It's great.
Look, in Australia, we have the longest pre-season in the world. So, I mean, we're waiting for this and been speaking about this for a long, long time. But now it's finally here. You know, players will all be keyed up. They're all prepared. They've all had, you know, most probably indifferent preparations like they always do. One or two clubs have got injuries that have come in and then had to injury replace. But it's the real stuff now. And it becomes then a week in, week out proposition. But I think the game for Brisbane and Melbourne Victory, both sets of players and staff, will be that excited just to get this thing going, you know?
Absolutely. Well, let's have a look at this game tonight, Brisbane Roar and Melbourne Victory. I mean, for me, the Brisbane Roar off-season has to have been a distraction. The whole ownership stuff, whether players were getting paid on time, all of that types of those types of issues. But a fairly, for me, also Melbourne Victory, a fairly understated pre-season from the perspective of the signings. What do you think about their signings this year?
We're talking Brisbane now.
Yeah, we're talking Brisbane and Melbourne Victory game.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Victory, we'll go back to Victory in a second, but yeah. I mean, Brisbane's brought, you know, I think Holman's a big, big get for Brisbane. We obviously know him from his Australian national team games, and he's, you know, he's come home, and for me, he'll be a big part. If he can get anywhere near like he was in the World Cup that we went to, and bring that type of form to the A-League, then he's going to liven this league up really, really well. So I think Holman, you've got Tommy Orr. I mean, obviously Tommy came in at the back end, but it was all a little bit, you know, from his stint in Ipswich, I think it was. But I think we remember last year we spoke to him about that and played in one cup.
Yeah, he told us everything was fine, and then a week later he's gone.
And then a week he's gone, like you do in football. So,
look, I've got a question for you, though, about Brisbane. Your boy, your love child, Jamie McLaren. I reckon he might figure in your prediction. Do you mind having, because I know you're an emotional guy, Dino. You've probably got him on top of the pile for top goal scorer, but he's the Spanish lad who left at the end of last season was a very good supplier of service to Jamie McLaren. Will he score as many goals as last year, do you think?
Look, I mean, if you ask Jamie, he's pretty confident about what he's about. Yeah. You know, there's quite a togetherness about the team. You know, I thought Brisbane did well last year. You know, they most probably, on paper, when we were looking at the preview from the year before, they overachieved. But they've got themselves now in a really good spot.
All right, mate, we've got to get through the whole round. So give us a prediction here, mate. This is going to be a tight one. You've gone through, you know, a pretty significant spine in Orr, Devere, McLaren. We haven't even mentioned Broich or Mackay. We've got major changes at the Victory as well. Archie Thompson is no longer in the number 10 shirt for the first time. James Troisi is back. Is there going to be a result in this one, or do they split the difference?
I'm going to just go out on a limb. I've watched Victory a few times in games in pre-season, and I think Victory can turn it round, because Brisbane haven't been beaten by Victory in the last three games they've played. But I'm going to stick my neck out, and Victory will win away.
Brisbane, for me, home, first game, got to go for the home team.
Yeah, I'm going with Edge on this one. I think Brisbane win this one.
I just might mark this down just so we've got some evidence. We've got Edge, yes.
All right. Now, the one I'm really looking forward to over and above all the
the big name marquee games that are on this weekend is to see how Ernie Merrick can manage this new outfit. Now, we're going to have a look at this game, having already had a chat to Ernie. He seems confident from what he had to say. Melbourne City, though, they've got one or two, maybe one big marquee signing in their squad.
Yeah, there's a certain Mr. Cahill who's joined our shores, and I think listening to an interview yesterday, they were talking about how much of an influence he's had on that dressing room. He is, whether he's the captain or he's not, he's the big driving force. He's organised everyone and got everybody professional and focused. So I think it'd be a much better, well-oiled, well-disciplined Melbourne City team. I think from Ernie's point of view, I can't understand about this international window. Why don't we marry up with it? Because, you know, you're losing half your team or something like that. And I think that will hurt them this week. But I think Wellington have had some really, really good, you know, additions with Finkler and your Barbarousses of the world. And I think Wellington will do okay this year. But I think with Tim... Tim's not going to play in this, but I think Melbourne City are going to be too strong.
All right, the big derby, massive crowd, the pre-sold
60 plus.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Hoping for 70,000, which would be a great story for the A-League, obviously a record. And I wonder how the surface will play. I think it'll play a part in the game, actually.
Look, it always does. It's always the surface that everybody talks about.
Well, the Rugby League Grand Final was played there on Sunday, just gone. So there's not much. It was an incredible atmosphere. But look, fortunately, Rugby League doesn't cut up a ground in the same way that Union does. So league, you can't make any real comparisons to football, but it looked like a pretty stable surface. The weather was good. It was perfect conditions, really. So they haven't had a lot of rain up in Sydney in recent times, the way that Melbourne, Adelaide have had. So hopefully it'll be as good as it can possibly be.
Look, it's going to be, crowd-wise, it'll be the biggest one we've had. It's going to be brilliant. I mean, both teams obviously have most probably not the warmest opinion of each other. You know,
interesting comments by Alex Broski.
I think... Oh, Broski would have said it tongue-in-cheek.
Of course.
He's Western Sydney family, really, aren't they?
So for those who haven't heard, what did Alex Broski say?
Oh, Broski just came out and said, look,
we hate all of them.
And he's a boy. And he's a boy from the Western suburbs
of
Sydney.
He is.
I think he's just put a target on his
with family who follow the Wanderers as well, from what we hear.
I think he's just started to throw one in the mix and see how it goes. But look, it'll be ferocious like they all are, all derbies are. You know, we've got one again coming here in Melbourne next week. So it'll build up and build up. It'll be a crescendo. We'll have a massive crowd. I'm impressed with Sydney FC this year. I know the Wanderers have recruited. They've done what they always do. They move a lot out and a whole lot new come in. And that does take sometimes a bit of time to gel. Having said that, Sydney FC have made some significant changes as well.
I'm with you on that one. I actually think Sydney FC will get over the top of the Wanderers here. Two things that stick out to me... The big change in personnel, I think the Wanderers will take some time to gel, but they were very ordinary against Melbourne City in the FFA Cup, the Wanderers. So that's tipped...
To the scales to Sydney.
So you're Sydney.
I'm Sydney. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go the opposite. I think the Wanderers, and Popper always has something up his sleeve. The best coach in the A-League. Wanderers to win this one 2-1.
Perth Glory and Central Coast Mariners. I think this will be a cricket score.
What, Central Mariners win?
No.
I think Perth
are ready to go.
Harry Redknapp's picked this one apart. He's got a game plan. Has he been to Australia?
Not yet. Look, Central Coast, tough times for them. Hopefully, from everybody's point of view, they're more competitive because obviously that's what the game needs. But again, I think we need to watch that space. I think Perth and Kenny Lowe, they did a fabulous job last year. And I can't see anything but a decent home win for Perth Glory.
All right, this last game on Sunday afternoon, the only game on Sunday, 5 o'clock kickoff at Hunter Stadium, Newcastle v the defending champions, who barely resemble the side that won the grand final.
Yeah, they've had a quite indifferent pre-season, Adelaide, but they've still got glittered with quality. They have lost some really significant players as well. And again, that might be one where we've
gone West. Gombau, Mork.
Goodwin,
Combow, I should say.
If you've got all of them going out, more coming in, it might be a Western Wanderers. It will take time. They had a slow start last year. Newcastle Jets, mind you, pre-season, have done pretty well. on the pitch. Yeah. They've had the moments off it, but certainly on the pitch, they've had a good pre-season. You know, they've been away to China and won results. They've had some good results back here. So I think Newcastle might nick this.
Yeah, I mean, I like Newcastle
too. We had Paul Oak on a couple of weeks ago, and he really sounded... he talked a big game, so...
Yeah, but Newcastle's Jets, you know, that's another interesting part of this game is they've got the former Adelaide United staffer as the coach.
No, exactly. So, yeah, look, it's going to be interesting. We'll just watch that space, but I've got a really good feeling that Newcastle get off to a good start.
Yeah, I think their signings have been good. Their pre-season has been good other than the change in coaching. But I think they're going to get up. And a bit of local momentum because the new coaching team are both local Newcastle lads.
Yeah, and I think if they get a decent crowd, get a win, and all of a sudden there's a bit of momentum. Now, before we finish, we just need to make a quick prediction.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, boys. This is quite... We're going to do four predictions here.
Go on then, Edge.
Yep. The first one is the Premier's Plate. Who is going to win? Who's going to win the league before the finals?
Melbourne City.
Yeah, me too. Melbourne City will win Premier's Plate, Rob?
Well, I'm going to... complete the hat-trick there because I've got them for Premier's Plate and Grand Final Premiership winners as well.
Okay, who's going to win the A-League Grand Final? I'll go first. I think Sydney FC will take out the Grand Final.
I'm with you. I think Sydney can win it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Sydney FC, Melbourne City Grand Final, and they will win. Rob?
No, he's got Melbourne City.
Yeah, no, he's
got boots and all.
Top goal scorer. Well, I mean, this is back in the favourite here. Bruno Fornaroli, I think, will do the job.
Fornaroli, yeah.
Jamie McLaren, if someone has to have him.
Oh, yeah. I'll go the golden boy. I'll go Jamie.
Very good, very good. And the Johnny Ryan medalist, the best player in the A-League for this season, for me, it's going to be Luke Bratton.
Look, I'm that's another love child of mine that got a few dotted around the league. It wouldn't surprise me, and I'm just going to throw this out there, Tim Cahill.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a guy going back to his roots, Costa Barbarousis under Ernie Merrick to be the Johnny Warren medalist.
Interesting. Very interesting.
We will revisit those at the end of the year.
We have an exciting time ahead, guys. It's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah, football. Can't wait tonight. Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Brisbane and Melbourne victory.
Well, we're going to talk a bit more A-League after the break because the CEO of the A-League, Greg O'Rourke, is going to join us. And we're going to talk a little bit about the competition coming up. But we also want to continue that discussion which we've been having over the last week about promotion, relegation, expansion, etc. That's all after the break.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. The A-League kicks off in a little over an hour. We've talked about it with Dean. We've asked Cozzy a little about it, but Simon Hill a lot. And then we're going to go into some more detailed discussion around the A-League and the talk about expansion, promotion, relegation. Is the head of that competition, Greg O'Rourke. Welcome to Box for the first time, Greg.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Right, so there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of noise around the kickoff to the competition. I guess you might be wiping your brow that it's actually going to start and we can just enjoy the football.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to a few of the team yesterday in the office about looking forward to the ball being kicked because quite clearly when that happens, the conversation starts and focuses on the football, and that's what we're all here to enjoy.
And there's so many stories this year. I mean, the obvious one is Tim Cahill with Melbourne City, but we're going to talk to Ernie Merrick in the next hour about the Wellington Phoenix, hopefully the rise of the Phoenix this year, to steal the pun. And we see football across the Tasman take its position, its rightful position in the top end of this league.
Yeah, I think it's clear if you listen to all the coaches and of all the clubs that they all believe that they've really built their squads in the off-season, and in fact they're all talking about being top four contenders, which will be interesting given that there's 10 teams all believing they can be top four, and Phoenix are one of those, grabbing a couple of high profile team members from Melbourne Victory, and also buying some other players, which has really built their capability. So I'm sure that Ernie is looking forward to, as you say, the rise of the Phoenix in 2016-17.
Greg, have you got a team? I mean, we've got the campaign going around. Everyone's got to have a team, but does the head of the A-League have a team?
No, I spoke to David Gallup yesterday about this as well. He thinks there's about two or three of us that can't buy into that, and we should have either no team or 10 teams. So, maybe we'll stay out of that one.
No, fair enough too, but I'm very interested in your background. I thought your appointment was really encouraging for football primarily because you've got a history in the game, a long time servant of the game in New South Wales. Therefore, I assume, you know, I've never spoken to you before, but I assume that you have a great understanding of the grassroots, and in particular, the discussion among what I call the core football fans about the future of the A-League expansion, and maybe at some point a second tier comp and some promotion relegation. Do you appreciate why fans talk about that a lot, and how much of that you know plays out in your thinking as you chart the course for the A-League moving forward?
Couple of questions there. So the first one is just a little bit on my background. Like you know, a couple of million Australian people out there, I still play the game. I've played the game for over 4 years and am continuing to be hopeless. But
it's all right, me too.
But enjoy it from that point of view. And like a lot of other people as well, got sort of roped into administration at a young age. But then I moved up through a club situation and ended up chairing the Southern Shire Football Association in Australia, which has nearly 20,000 players. And then moved to chair Football New South Wales after that, and then now taking on the national role. So I've sort of lived and administrated through all the levels of the game and had a lot of relationships at those levels. So know a lot of people in the area, but more importantly, to your point, know a lot of the feeling in respect of what needed to happen to this game, how do we unlock this game, and that sort of feeling deep in most hearts about how come this game, this code of football, is not sitting at the level in this country where most football-loving people believe it should be. We're currently sitting third or fourth on that ladder, if you like, compared to AFL, NRL and other codes. And my role, really, with my corporate background as well, is to advance that up the ladder.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to the head of the A-League, Greg O'Rourke. Now, Greg, so clearly you're a football man. Those who know you knew that. Those who are listening are learning more about your background and will be obviously pleased to hear of your substantial pedigree. That means you understand the nature of aspiration with clubs that are at the next tier down and their desire to join the top flight. Now, we know promotion relegation is several years away, but there's a big discussion in this country around the expansion of the competition and who will be the two new teams which are on the agenda. So we've heard some comment around that from David Gallop in particular, but we haven't heard a specific plan or a specific vision. What can you tell us about the expectation of a time frame, a roadmap to getting these two new teams, and who are the top, say, three or four clubs? You know, your Sutherland Shire is one of them. Lots of teams around the country.
So I think it, in respect of number, 12 seems to be a very common number that both the broadcasters and the FFA and others are talking about as being the immediate number. There has been some other numbers being thrown around which are higher, but I'd suggest to most people to focus on the competition expanding from 10 to 12 sooner rather than later. The framework around doing that is that, as you can imagine, every time this is spoken about in the media, we receive unsolicited applications, if you like, for want of a better word, from all over the country, you know, from as far down south in Tasmania, as far west in Western Australia, and also from the tip of Queensland and everywhere in between. And we've been receiving those. So the process will be that we'll have a formal application. It won't be a matter of the FFA walking around and then just choosing a venue. We will open it up and we will ask people to put a business case, frankly, together, and that's a football case and a business case as to why they believe the next A-League team should be in their part of the geography. We will then need to overlay that into, you know, broadcasts and commercial partners. Obviously, if you're in a pay TV area, you want to be making sure that that new team will be attracting new subscribers and generating commercial revenue. So there's a lot of that, you know, is the reality of life, as well as the aspiration of NPL clubs in certain geographies that feel that, you know, they were leading the way in soccer football back prior to the A-League starting 12 years ago. And we'll take all that into the mix and hopefully come up with a decision that suits most people. I'm sure some people will be disappointed, but the growth to 12 could be in any of those major capital cities, or it could be in some areas that we are not even aware of the aspiration.
Greg, I assume as you the broadcast arrangements, I mean, there's a lot of interest in what's going to play out free-to-air or not, increasing revenue or not. Foxtel, Fox Sports, maybe even Optus, there's a whole range of permutations. I assume that in those discussions, the expansion would, that's an extra game to be broadcast. So I assume that's going to be covered off in the contractual arrangements. So is it possible that we might have 12 teams sooner rather than later, or would it need to occur in the next broadcast agreement?
No, I think it could quite clearly occur in this broadcast agreement, right, which is for the following season, right? The last season of this broadcast agreement is the one that kicks off tonight, but the following season is the new broadcast first year. Now, to have it in year one would probably not be possible in respect of, I know that Wanderers would build pretty quickly, but that was, probably a very different scenario. I expect that this will take a little bit longer, but would it need to wait to the following broadcast period? My answer to that would be no. It wouldn't need to, and we could probably, with inside this contract that we're building, have a clause or a step in there which will allow for expansion.
Well, that will be music to the ears of many of our listeners all around Australia. That's terrific. One of the items that I find interesting in this discussion, Greg, is the interest of the existing A-League owners, which when I talk to some shareholders at various clubs, they're very defensive about any future promotion or relegation. The fans, though, have a very different view, and I think there is a bit of a collision of interests or a collision of objective and goals in around this issue. Club owners want to protect their position in the A-League, and those outside want to get in, and fans of traditional clubs, which are a substantial group of people. Often you hear about the existing agreements with A-League clubs being a barrier to promotion and relegation. Is that an item that you think about a lot, and is it a structural consideration that you are trying to get your head around and put in place so at least there'd be an option for a second tier in promotion and relegation in the long-term future?
Definitely something I think about. I'm not sure that I think about it as a first priority. I think the first priority is definitely the expansion, which we've just touched upon. I think that, you move from 10 to 12 to a higher number, and whether that's through promotion or whether that's just through new applications or club licences, time will tell. I think relegation is a very different subject. You need to understand that those club owners have invested, and a lot of them from day one, and a lot of them as the way through have invested in this A-League to get it to where it is today, and it's a very different product and a very much improved product today than it was sort of 5 and definitely 12 years ago, and they've invested their own money and in many cases have lost money on an annual basis. For them, after years and years of investment, to take the league to a place where you say, okay, now we're ready and there's an opportunity for you to be relegated, it probably just doesn't hit at the it's even fair position as opposed to a contractual legal position. So we need to balance that. We need to also balance an investment, right? We're looking for owners to come in and invest in this A-League, to invest in training facilities, to invest in marquee players. We're not going to attract a lot of people to business if we tell them that the potential is that we'll get you invest, put all this money in, but next year if you are at the bottom of the table, you could be relegated. So, there's a reality there of capital investment and ownership models as well. So I think you need to balance all these sorts of things with this very much an aspiration of other clubs to join. I think the only other point I'd make on that is, and I think it's fair to say that FFA have in fact put in place forums and frameworks such as the FFA Cup and the NPL Final Series, which have allowed NPL clubs to showcase themselves and to compete at that level, both against the best of the best in the member federation state-based land and also up against the David and Goliaths. And we saw only last week the Bentley Greens versus Melbourne Victory game down in Kingston Heath, Victoria, which showcased, and up until 60 minutes, that was a 0-0 situation before Melbourne Victory went on to win. So I think you're actually seeing a very conscious effort from the FFA to bring these competitions closer and also in a visual way to actually allow people to see that through pay TV.
Greg, we'll need to have you on to have extended discussions around these issues because listening to you, you've clearly got a firm grasp on the whole conversation, but for every answer, there's an opposite and equal reaction to somebody out there in football land who might say yes, but. So we want to ask you some more of those yes, but questions down the track.
All right, thanks for having me.
Not at
all. Happy to be back.
We'll look forward to it, mate. Next hour, Ernie Merrick's going to be on the line from New Zealand. Then Dino returns with a look at everything else that's going on in Europe.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. That was a massive hour. All Socceroo'd out with Cozzy and Simon Hill getting us through the events in Saudi Arabia. We'll get into second edition football news shortly before we talk to Ernie Merrick. And then Dean, he's going to be back talking all of the action in Europe. But first, with the second edition news, it's over to you again, Marco.
Of course, it was all about the Socceroos. It's also all about the A-League. Now, speaking at the A-League launch this week, FFA CEO David Gallop revealed the new marketing strategy for the upcoming season. We did, of course, touch on this with Greg O'Rourke. But this You've Got to Have a Team campaign focuses on the 50% of kids. That's 50% of kids aged 15 and under who are not supporters of an A-League team. Little Yoshi, of course, made an appearance this week. I spoke to you during the week about this, Michael. At first, it didn't really cut it with me. That said, I'm not a 15-year-old kid, so they're probably not after me anyway. But then I had a look. Yoshi has been wooed by all sorts of people that don't know out there. Yoshi is a little kid. He's won a competition.
10-year-old boy.
He is being 10-year-old boy being basically courted by all 10 A-League clubs. They've flown him around Australia and New Zealand, and they've all given him a special treat. Sydney FC took him up in a helicopter ride over the harbour. Perth, they played five-a-side down at Cottesloe Beach. So they're trying to woo him. So it's a bit gimmicky, but it's probably going to work for the kids. And what I did like is on the FFA website, and it's gone viral, they've done 10 videos at each club. And it's a bit of a taking the mickey a little bit. They're going through all the reasons he would barrack for the club. So I like it in the end. We got there.
Yeah, I'm a bit with your initial reaction.
Keep in mind, again, we're not the target for this.
No, that's right. We're not the target for it.
The only question I had on that, though, was that we're talking about expansion as well. I mean, okay, you need a successful campaign to bring young kids along. That's all well and good. But if we're looking at expansion in areas that currently don't have A-League sides, or, you know, looking at some of the old NSL clubs who are, you know, agitating to get into the top flight, what about those kids? You know,
well, I've got to say again, it wasn't targeted at me. So you've got to have a team. Well, I've got one, and you won't let them in the bloody A-League. So and I even saw someone yesterday saying, oh, you know, you've got to have a team. Well, Gold Coast had a team. North Queensland had a team. Wollongong had a team. You know, just listed all the places. Auckland had a team. So, yeah, you're right. So that said, again, they're not trying to convert probably a kid in North Queensland necessarily with this. Again, it's the kids.
They weren't thinking of expansion when they did the marketing campaign, that's for sure.
That's right. They're talking about kids
and nor
in
should
Sydney,
they really. It's about,
Sydney, yeah. Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, the places where there are teams, which is the most populated places in the country, it must be said. It's about converting those. So let's see how they go. Yeah. Now, you touched on expansion. David Gallop did say certainly 10 teams are too few. We want to move to 12 teams relatively quickly. But the first step is that some big commercial deals in the game need to be done. Again, Greg O'Rourke touched on this. But it's funny that David Gallop, they've come out of nowhere because they've been criticised for this, the FFA, of not having any clear direction. It doesn't mean you have to have these extra teams overnight, but there needs to be a direction to do it. And they've been too long.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was our line of questioning with Greg O'Rourke, wasn't it? Because at the end of the day, I've been critical about them not having a plan and sticking towards a time frame. There are these sort of throwaway comments that are happening in press conferences and various interviews, but there doesn't seem to be a stated objective about the expansion and the second tier and a time frame for it.
You've got your head firmly in the commercial world of football. This softening of talk around the TV rights. I mean, we heard originally some very bullish conversation that we're going to get double the money. It was going to be $80 million. Now we're talking about a softening. Where are we going to get a landing on this? And clearly that's going to directly affect expansion in some way.
Oh, it certainly will. I mean, expansion will need to be off the back of a commercial deal that gives them more money to do that. So, look, it's a tough time for the FFA in relation to their commercial deal. They should be getting a better TV right. But
should they? This is the problem. On the current metrics, and I'm talking to Fox Sports people about this, the numbers don't stack up. The numbers just haven't really improved in terms of the ratings for the product. So while we just go naturally, there's going to be a natural increase.
That plays into the argument about the A-League being stale.
Correct.
Because it hasn't grown. And I think actually the lack of a stated objective around expansion in the second tier is actually stifling the growth of the A-League.
And that's exactly the point I was going to make, because, you know, the AFL, they went cap in hand to the networks last time saying, hey, we want $2 billion, you know, want to double our money. And the networks would say, well, why? Well, here's what we're doing. We're investing $20 million a year, whether it's a good idea or not, in the Gold Coast, in Greater Western Sydney, and this is our 25-year plan. There's nothing. So how FFA...
I think you're probably gilding the lily there a little bit, because Rupert came in with a uncommercial return for the AFL based on emotion, and he's spinning the dummy with the NRL.
Well.
Yep. So that plays differently. I think they'll get more money, but I think they could get a lot more money if they had said, look, in 10 years' time, we're going to have a second-tier competition and double the amount of games that are available to broadcast, and they can have a time frame along those fronts. Broadcasters need to see a future vision for what it's going to be.
And the reality is we're not sure they're seeing that at the moment. Hey, just quickly, it's not on the rundown here, and we don't want to turn this into just a TV rights discussion, but Adrian DiPietro at Melbourne Victory season launch this week, not the first time, has basically really pushed the FFA to, one, get this TV deal right, but also really push the free-to-air angle, where unfortunately FFA are in that between a rock and a hard place where they desperately need the money to come in, yet DiPietro again has sort of intimated, and as someone who has significant skin in the game, that they'd be willing to forego some dollars to get the product on free-to-air, which we've obviously seen with the Socceroos. Anyway, let's see.
But I don't think the all A-League chairman would share that view of Anthony's, because some of them need the money.
Yeah, correct. Most A-League chairmen don't have 25,000
members,
do they?
Well, they've got the free-to-air the foot in the door, at least, with the Socceroos deal, and we've seen Fox Channel 9 Go debut with the Saudi Arabia match, so that's a start, and people didn't know, largely in the general public, unless you were right into the football sort of conversation, that the game was on. Nine didn't exactly have a lot of time to promote it, but you'd imagine that over the course of the weekend, with this result in Saudi Arabia and the Japan game coming up, that they're going to promote that one most likely around Timmy Cahill. That's what they'll do. They'll hang it off the one big name.
Yeah, look, it's extremely positive. Would have loved to see Tuesday night's game against Japan. It's obviously our biggest game of the whole qualification process. And at home, in front of a big crowd in Melbourne, you would have hoped that one made it onto the main network. But either way, it's a massive step forward. Now, foxsports.com.au this week has reported the goodwill and interest from Michael Essien towards Melbourne Victory was very much genuine, and he was eager to make Australia his next destination in his impressive career, which of course included spells with Chelsea and Real Madrid and AC Milan. But the tyranny of distance apparently proved a step too far. So there's a lot of reporting about why he didn't sign in the end. The 33-year-old was reluctant to part from his family, with two young children in school in London, where his wife would have remained had he have moved to the A-League. Having travelled vastly through his European career, it's understood he was not keen for globetrotting. That makes sense, because as we know, boys...
You were Australia never confident that he was going to come, were you?
No, I wasn't, but Australia ain't close to anywhere, is it? So...
Precisely.
Michael, I was looking at you.
No, you're looking at me. I'm just looking at you.
Just waiting for a response.
Yeah, I'm looking at you because you've just put that in your news rundown because you want to reaffirm that you were right and Dave Davidovich was wrong.
No. Are you keen for Dave never to come on this show ever again? Are you? No, Dave. He's one of Melbourne's top lads. Don't be like that. Now, no one knows how to add spice to a contest, boys, like Bessart, Berisha. Now, of course, we've already touched on the A-League this week with Dino in the first hour. But the Victory striker is, of course, heading back to Brisbane, where his A-League career started. And in the same breath, he paid tribute to his former supporters. He also had a barb ready to go for his old club. And I quote, "When I was with Brisbane, we'd be number one on the table, and sometimes we'd play in front of 8,000 people. I'm like an old-school football player. I'm a striker who scores goals, and I like to go to the crowd to celebrate them. When I scored for the Roar in Brisbane, sometimes I had to check where the supporters were. I wanted to run to them, but I had to check if they were there. It was a shame, to be honest." Nice
Whack.
Little backhander.
Well, they'll welcome him home tonight in about half an hour's time.
I like that, and I do agree with him. So Brisbane supporters, get out there.
Yeah, well,
I reckon they're going to get a big crowd in a couple of hours' time. So let's see. Now, Wayne Rooney has admitted he deserved to be dropped by Jose Mourinho, but insists he still has a lot to offer both Manchester United and England. I disagree, Wayne. Rooney has been on the bench for United's last three matches, dropped following what he described as a bad game against Watford back in September, a performance that led to speculation we could be seeing the beginning of the end for the striker. Speaking to The Independent ahead of England's first matches post-Sam Allardyce, of course, that played out actually this morning, Rooney was frank when asked if he was worried about his form. To be honest, I felt I started the season okay. I had a bad game, certainly, a very bad second half against Watford, but I'm not worried. Should he be worried, boys?
Well, he probably should be, because when he doesn't play, Manchester United seem to play better. So there's a new coach in the England setup now that Big Sam has departed. there might be at least in the future there'll be a permanent coach who we haven't heard.
I think he's in trouble at Manchester United, no question about that.
Yeah.
Now, just we've only got a little bit of time, but Manchester United fans were beside themselves when the club signed, I'm saying this with a bit of shade on Friday, I can tell you, when the club signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic for free in the off-season. Zlatan had spent the previous 4 years in that Hellfire League, the League One in France. He scored 113 goals in 122 games for PSG. The stats actually show United's number nine has the worst shot conversion rate amongst the Premier League strikers. The 35-year-old has so far had a whopping 28 shots in the league, comfortably the most, with his four goals giving him a shot conversion of 14.29%. Well done, United.
And that is a huge statistic.
Oh, he likes having a dig, doesn't he?
He does, he does. Good stuff, Marco. Well, we're going to talk to Ernie Merrick next. We'll come back later, mate. Save some of your best for stoppage time, because that is when you really shine.
Well, let's hope.
Box to box. The Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. He's a good mate of the show and has a massive job on his hands this season to turn one of the competition's nearly teams into a contender. We think he can do it. Ernie Merrick, good to have you back on the show.
Good to be here, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Ernie, you've sort of flown under the radar a little, given that a lot of the talk has been about Tim Cahill and some of the big signings in Australia, but you've really compiled some substantial signings, most notably from our end, Guy Finkler at Costa Barbarousis. You must be bullish going into this season.
Yes, we certainly are, and by the way, I love to fly under the radar. Everyone else can be put under the microscope, but it's good over here. I mean, we do a lot on radio and television and in the print media over here, but we don't yet get too much over there in Australia, but hopefully that will change with the results. And yes, we're really happy with our recruiting this year, and we've been very specific to make sure we recruit the type of players that fit into our style of play. So Costa Barbarousis was a no-brainer, and also he's to New Zealand as Timmy Cahill is to Australia. Mm. He's one of New Zealand's best ever players and a great, exciting striker. And he brought his mate with him, which we're really happy about, Guy Finkler. And he during pre-season, they played nine games and they've just really clicked well. But he's providing service to Roy Krishna and Mikey McGlinchey as well. So things are really looking up in the attacking department. Another key signing for us was Marco Rossi, who's our centre-back, who replaces Ben Sigmund. He's a little bit better looking than Ben. He's not as tough, but he's an amazing player, and he's just made a huge difference to our back line. And on top of that, we've signed a couple of NPL players, three actually, one from Western Australia, Ryan Lowry, whose brother Shane plays for Perth Glory, Adam Parkhouse, who is the NPL Player of the Year in New South Wales, and Jacob Tratt from New South Wales. And they play in predominantly defence. Adam, actually, Parkhouse, is a left winger, and I've converted him to a left back for this first match because we're without Tom Doyle. So all in all, we've had a very good pre-season, and our recruits we're very happy with.
Ernie, obviously the item that we need to talk about, despite all of the positivity and the excitement of at the start of a new A-League season, unfortunately you have players unavailable because of the international break. We've had a fair bit of a commentary here in Australia about your club in particular, and also the relevance of allowing you guys to postpone that game, like it was in the old NSL days when you had more than three players selected for international duty. Can you just give us your thoughts on that? Because it does take away from round one of the season when you said your Tim Cahill, Costa Barbarousis, is not going to be available because of international duty.
Yes, it is a problem for the Phoenix, but it's always been a problem. And having been in the league since 2005, the coaches have brought it up. All the coaches have brought it up every year since 2005, and this is our 12th season. So it's an ongoing problem. It will change in Australia, I think, when Angie Postecoglou starts to choose more and more local A-League players, because the effect is enormous. We have six have been selected. So our captain as well, Durante, Barbarousis, McGlinchey, Fenton, Redenton, and Tom Doyle. Tom Doyle can't go because of injury. But we expect there to be 8 to 10 in the November window, because we'll be involved in the New Zealand All Whites will be involved in the World Cup qualifiers and playing the island nations. And traditionally, a lot of the bigger names like Winston Reid don't come back for those games. Plus, Roy Krishna will be called up by the Fijian national team. So it's only going to get worse, and it'll affect everyone. We can't do anything about it other than let our thoughts, feelings be known. But having said that, I still feel that we've got better depth this year, and we've got a very strong starting lineup against Melbourne City tomorrow. And we just lack a bit of A-League experience on the bench.
Ernie, it's Dean here. I just thought I'd touch on, with obviously me being involved in the NPL, the fact that you've brought those three boys in addition to also Dylan Fox that you brought in last year. How do you find their adjustment from life in the NPL to the A-League?
It's a big step up, Dean, and I understand that we understand how difficult it is for them to go from 2-3 nights training a week to training 5-6 days a week, double sessions often.
Yeah.
So we have to monitor that very carefully. But I feel, I think there was an article on it from Chris Taylor who spoke about the quality of players.
Yeah,
in the
he
NPLs.
Did.
And I totally agree with him. And we've always looked at bringing in players from the NPL. I'm still looking at another one from Queensland because we've only got 21 players. And sometimes these players have played at a good standard and they just haven't had the opportunity to break in. For example, Jacob Tratt was 2 years youth with Sydney and 1 year full-time senior pro, but he got glandular fever, so never really got a chance. And a club like Sydney can't take risks on young players.
Of course not.
Parkhouse played for 2 years non-league in England when his family were over there as a teenager. So he's a pretty tough lad, even though he's got a very slim build, but he's quick. And he won the New South Wales Player of the Year. And Ryan Lowry was, as a junior under 15, was briefly with Leicester City captain, and he's captained last year, Joondalup. So he's played 2 or 3 years as a youngster and captained an NPL side. So if you see that sort of history, and around about the age of 21, 22, I think they certainly deserve another chance. And none of them up until now has let this down at all. In fact, they'll all be called on probably to play tomorrow.
Look, you certainly won't get any argument from me. I'm very big on trying to promote the boys from the NPL into the A-League. Just going, moving aside now to Guy Finkler, I read something or heard something yesterday that you'd mentioned about the way you want to play him specifically with the players around him up in that top third, where I think it was something on the lines that you didn't want him to do as much running and play a little bit higher. Is that right?
Yes, Guy, when he played with the Victory and did a great job, he had three strikers in front of him, Berisha and two wingers. And his job was really supply, get the ball into those boys and they'll do a job and take free kicks. With us, I'm expecting him to do a lot more work higher and take the weight off him defensively, because we've got some pretty hard-working defenders in behind him like Vince Lea, Rolly Bonavazia, Alex Rodriguez. So with us, he'll get more freedom from defensive work, but I'm pushing him forward and he's got a terrific shot on him, but he's just too nice and too selfless. In any case, I'm trying to turn him into a greedy sort of selfish person anywhere around the box, and it seems to be working with him, and he's enjoying it as well.
Superb.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Ernie Merrick, coach of the Wellington Phoenix, ahead of the A-League, which kicks off tonight, but they kick off their season against Melbourne City. So, Ernie, we've looked in detail at your club. What's your overall view of the competition? Do you have some observations on any of the other teams? I know it's not the sort of standard question most coaches like to answer, but are there any teams that you expect to rise or fall in the competition as the Phoenix endeavour to get a top four spot this year?
No, I think that's a good question. Because I've been around for so long, I've just seen an enormous rise in the quality of players coming over, the standard of the teams, the improvement in coaching. And that's evidenced also with Australia winning the Asia Cup and the Wanderers winning the club competition in Asia. So we're to get a player like Marco Rossi's quality, who's still only 28. In fact, he's not. He turned 29 last week, and he's still a youngster, Serie A player, Serie B player. To get these quality players is first class for all the clubs. And the spending of clubs and the commitment of them, I think is just excellent. Sydney, the two Sydney teams are spending up big. The two Melbourne teams, I don't have to tell you about Melbourne City, and now Victory have got Rojas and brought back Troisi. And to me, that's great for the league. To have a team like Manchester City being involved with Melbourne City, it doesn't get any better. I'd love to see a few more teams coming over and getting involved with our league. But even Perth Glory and Roar, who have just walked back home, and I think the quality of the players in the league, the standard of the football, standard of the coaching, all in all, it's a great thing. And it must be a big attraction to the broadcasters now. And worldwide, leagues live or die by their broadcasting rights and the sales from those. And so we're headed in the right direction. I think it's just great to be a part of it still.
Ernie, you'll always be a part of it, mate. You were there from the start. Your reputation was set in stone before you crossed the Tasman. We hope it continues to rise this season as we watch the Wellington Phoenix at close hand.
Thanks, boys.
Next up, Dino with his European wrap.
Box to box. For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
they're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, all for our very good mates at Chemist Warehouse and Storage King. Now, we've had a bumper show this evening, and we've got a lot more to talk about because we haven't even touched on football in Europe. Dino, it was a World Cup feast.
Yeah, qualifiers.
Yeah, so get into it for us.
Well, basically, buddy. what we've got is there's Group D, Group G, and Group I. So obviously, there's a little bit of closeness in my heart because Wales are still top of Group D, which is.
There was a bit of angst going into that game. The Austrian coach had a bit of a crack at the Welsh.
They did, yes, or he did rather. And look, I think it's all part of the spirit of the game. Yeah. It's they're a bit lucky here and a bit lucky there, and obviously they had an awful Euro, so. Mm-hmm. But anyway, look, it's all about just, a bit of gamesmanship and see who blinks first. And Wales led throughout the contest, but a young boy from Stoke caught us twice, and it's Tito.
He's a super player. I really love him.
I love watching him as well. He's good.
He's Barney Rubble on steroids, Arnautovic,
he is. He's good. He's direct. He goes at people. And, that surprised me how bad a start Stoke have had in the Premier League as well, with the quality of, him in the team. But it was a 2-2.
Take us through the scores.
Austria.
From this morning's games, obviously.
So from Group D, it was Austria 2 and Wales 2. The Republic of Ireland beat Georgia at home 1-0. What happened next?
Serbia 3-0 over Moldova.
Well, they did. It was predictable.
Yeah.
And then obviously with Georgia, from Georgia's point of view, they're bottom of the table. I mean, so what it really means now, if you look through the table, Wales are on 4 points, Austria on 4, Republic of Ireland on 4, and Serbia on 4.
Yeah.
So for me, Georgia and Moldova, it's going to be tough for them. It's going to be tough. They've got no points and the goal difference is inferior. But it's a really, really tight contest at the top. I think from Wales' point of view, great result against a good opposition away. But the Republic of Ireland, they had a good Euros, and I think they're building, building blocks in Group D.
Now, quickly, just go to Group G. Just hit us up with the scores and how that goes,
All right, well, Group G, this was another interesting one. Albania won 2-0 at Liechtenstein, so they go top of the league. The big game was obviously the Spain-Italy. Ended up in a 1-1 draw. What's significant there is Spain's goal difference is massive from their first round. Albania on 6 points, Spain and Italy are on 4. With Israel...
Israel beat the former Yugoslav Republic, Macedonia.
They did, and
they're coming, Israel. And not only in the international game, but in club football as well. So we expect a result, sort of Iceland style from them at some stage.
Yeah, and that was in Macedonia, which is not always easy. But again, that puts Macedonia near the bottom. And Liechtenstein, unfortunately, that's where Albania won. And they're bottom of the league.
And speaking of Iceland in Group L... 3-2 winners over Finland, Iceland, in the battle of the...
States.
What would that be? It's got to be
Well, what was interesting with Group I is that all the first-round games were all draws. So everybody was equal, you know, no goal difference. Everyone was on draw. So everyone came in with a point. But then since then, it's all gone, you know, Croatia, obviously with their win, takes them on to 4 points. Iceland have continued their success from Euros, and they're on 4 points, but a bit of an inferior goal difference to Croatia. And we talk about goal difference because it does make a difference, as we all know. Turkey and Ukraine are in the middle of that table on 2 points. And then you've got Finland and Kosovo bringing up the rear with 1 point each. So Kosovo. That group's a lot tighter than all the others. I think, you know, even on 1 point, you still can get bounced back in it with a win. But I think when you're looking at Georgia and Moldova in Group D, long way to go for them.
I've got a question for you, because yeah. There's a few Euro snobs that kick around in our networks. I mean, you can't have lived in football like we have without all your Euro snobs and your sort of the home nations and all that sort yeah. of stuff. And there's been quite a bit of commentary at different times about how weak some of these Asian World Cup qualifiers are, in particular the round, not this current round, but the one before, you know, with Bhutan.
I think I know where you're going with this. You're going to say the same here.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go through. There's some games tomorrow morning.
There is, yeah.
And there's a couple of absolute crackers. I mean, you reckon we've in Asia got some? I'm going to have a go at the Euro snobs here. What about some of these games? Latvia versus the Faroe Islands, for example.
There'll be a lot of people glued to that one.
Estonia. What about this one? Estonia versus Gibraltar. I mean, really?
Yes, it's.
But Gibraltar, they got a result over. Who was it recently? I know there was a result there from Gibraltar over one of the.
That was in the Champions League, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was in the Champions League.
That was
Celtic.
The club side.
That was Celtic, wasn't it? Yeah.
But what about. We've got the intra club practice game, which is actually the full on World Cup qualifier. What about this one? Greece versus Cyprus.
No, there'll be a bit of feeling in that
it's
one.
It's a local derby.
It is a local derby. I mean, France, obviously. With Euro, you know, they're having the Euros, they're at home to Bulgaria, so that'll be an interesting game. But really, Netherlands versus Belarus.
Edge's point's a good one.
It is a great point.
Because I know we have a bit of sport about some of the Asian teams. I mean, I know you guys aren't as big a fan of the Thai national side as I am,
yeah.
But the world of football internationally, the high water mark is rising. You know, these lesser teams internationally are performing better at every level. I mean, I know we had a bit of fun with Iceland before, but they came from nowhere.
Absolutely.
And if teams are prepped and organised and they've got the right gaffer in charge and they've got a good culture within the organisation and they've got one or two spearheads with some journeymen, they can do something special.
Look, you only have to look at Wales. And I know, you know, obviously I'm on there, so I'm a bit biased, but 60-odd years. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Western Bulldogs are okay, isn't it?
Exactly. It's exactly that.
Cronulla show.
And I think Leicester, for me, has set that trend where you know, the Wales of the world, the Leicesters of the world, the Cronulla Sharks of the world, you know, all different sports and codes.
And is it Rostov in Russia? They were the Leicester of the Russian league last year in the Champions League.
And I think and I'm not sure really why it's happening, because you're always thinking with the amount of money that's in the game now, the big clubs, like we said, Leicester will fall off the perch, and obviously it'll be the big clubs, and sure enough,
but still doing well, and the Tinker Man is setting them up nicely in the Champions League.
He is, so, but I mean...
So hang on, but there's another one we've got to bring into the equation here, because it's just set up beautifully, isn't it? If we go to Saturday, which is Sunday morning our time, England versus Malta. Oh, yeah. could the Maltese just rock over to Wembley and embarrass them even? Is it possible? I mean, we've had Allardyce Gate, we've had Rooney not getting a game for Manchester United.
Just talk about England. We're talking about off air about Gary Cahill's comments of saying Gareth Southgate could take us forward. I'm waiting for somebody who's in the England setup to say, by the way, Gareth Southgate can't take us forward, and then see the fallout. No one will ever say it. No one will ever do it. And they don't. They just make the normal general comments.
Are you saying it?
It's interesting with Gareth. I mean, he's not had most probably the biggest success as a manager when he was in the Premier League. He hasn't lasted long at the top jobs. He's been great at youth level, wherever he's gone in the youth level. He was a fabulous player himself. I mean, I watched him in the Euros in 96. But unfortunately, he missed the penalty, which no one ever forgot. Mm-hmm. But look, he's a great professional. I've met him personally when we were at Middlesbrough. And look, I hope he goes really, really well. And look, it could be. I mean, I'm not one to talk. I mean, I'm the one that was banging on about Sam Allardyce. And look how that's ended up.
We all did there.
We all jumped on. But... it might be that, you know, that quiet achiever, a little bit more reserved, and I think that's what the way his personality is. Yeah. He's confident about what he can do. And again, it's, I just laugh though when I look at the comments of, well, what are you going to say? No, sorry, I don't know about that appointment. I can't see that working. And then he's out the England squad.
Well, we won't know one thing about Gareth is he won't be accepting any invitations to tea at five-star hotels
also,
from unknown international businessmen.
No, exactly. Now, what I do want to... Scotland.
Yeah, to be
now, you know, as much as, you know, I've been brought up in Britain and the Scots do get a bit rough. I mean, in the old days, they used to be going to World Cups regularly when I was growing up. Been a long time between drinks for them, but their last win was a really, really big win that's then gone, right, well, hold on, we're top of the group. And I think at home to Lithuania, you know, that goes to 6 points, and that gives them a really good foothold, really, in a really good start in their
campaign.
And they're
still smarting from being the only home nation not to qualify for the Euros, so they've got a point to prove at so many levels.
Without doubt. And I think also Germany, Czech Republic, that'll be an interesting game.
Ooh, good game, that
you know, one. That's one of the better games of the round in... And most probably the one to bring it home is maybe Poland, Denmark. But outside of that, we're scratching on, you know, really
it's definitely
big
not
games.
Northern Ireland and San Marino.
Okay. Now, we've been all over the world in football, but all over the world, Michael Bublé has had our ladies going weak at the knees thanks to his jaw-dropping voice or his other swoonable attributes. And now Michael Bublé has a special invitation for you, our lady listeners out there. Introducing Bublé's first ever fragrance by invitation. Of course, it's exclusive to Chemist Warehouse. The oriental floral composition is touched with subtle gourmand notes, creating a juicy floral with creamy undertones, one of the most appealing and beautiful women's fragrances on the market right now. So you can purchase by invitation, get in early for Christmas. You don't want to miss out because this is going to be a top seller, like most of Michael Bublé's big hits. First ever fragrance for Michael, exclusively at Chemist Warehouse, only for $49. Lowest prices guaranteed. Boys, we're going to get out there and get some of Bublé's finest.
Order, put my order in last week.
I'm telling you, mate, I took my little Alexander to see Michael Bublé at Rod Laver Arena. I went in with no expectations. And I left. Now, I've seen some big acts, yep, mate. I went two nights in a row to see Queen. I've seen Dire Straits, the best of the Aussie performers from INXS to Cold Chisel. Bublé is a first-class act all the way.
Without
and if
doubt.
This fragrance is anywhere near him and his performance, I'm telling you, mate, you need to get some of that.
I watched him on that show when there was... It was from Canada. It was the Christmas show.
Yeah.
And he hosts it and... He does a couple of duets with some really big Simon. What a voice that man's got. And I like him. I think he brings something to the table. And that fragrance, hopefully, will bring plenty to the table.
Absolutely. Will, you haven't commented yet, Ed. You need to get something for Pip there, mate, for Christmas. And
no,
ladies
I think
in
we,
your
I think we get your mate from Nottingham to do a Michael Bublé thing on his Facebook page. Johnny Beckett.
That's not a good look. Let me tell you, that is not a good look.
Okay, so get into Chemist Warehouse by invitation. Michael Bublé's first ever fragrance, $49. After the break, we've left some for stoppage time. Mark Van Aken's going to come in with some of his finest work, Bublé style, and he's going to deliver it on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box. The fourth official signals. There are 10 minutes left. We've got plenty of time for Mark to get through his best work. How are you going to start us off, brother?
Well, new Sydney recruit Josh Brilliante has lifted the lid on his very difficult time, inverted commas, after his dream move to the Serie A with Fiorentina. Brilliante was one of Coach Graham Arnold's key signings for this season and lured him back from Europe to bolster the Sky Blues' backline. Going over there, I really didn't know what to expect, he told 442 this week. Manager Vincent Montella played me in the first game, which I didn't expect at all, but in the early stages of that debut game against the Italian giants Roma, Brilliante misplaced a pass, which led to Fiorentina conceding a goal. As 35 minutes came up on the clock, I shouldn't laugh, Brilliante was substituted and his Italian career was all but over before it had begun. How's that? He got a gig in that first game, didn't expect it, errant pass, bang, never to be seen again.
A rooster one day, feather dusted the next, but fortunately there is redemption in sport and he gets it coming home.
Hey Mark, what did you think about Gregor Rourke's discussion with Rob and I earlier in the show? In particular, how do you think he performed selling to the grassroots that promotion relegation is way off and not even really a consideration?
What is frustrating, I'm going to talk more broadly, and I've just actually seen an article come up today from a short article from Stephen Lowy, or from AAP on Stephen Lowy, saying the game's fragile. And I'm not sure. I mean, I know you can be cautious, and you have to be cautious to a degree, but on the eve of the A-League, do we really need our chairman coming out and saying the game's fragile and we're walking on eggshells? Or do you want to sell ourselves that things are on the up? And, you know, Newcastle's got a new owner in there. Central Coast is trying to buy their own stadium, so they're actually showing, you know, Mike Charlesworth showing not he's not just a part-time owner there. He wants to actually go and buy the whole bloody stadium and really build up an asset there. Brisbane Roar, they're working through, well, obviously, victory.
We had Benita Merciardi's on a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the money that is in football in Australia. Some of the wealthiest people in the world are involved in our competition. You can't say that about the AFL or the NRL. So, you know, there is no need to talk it down. There's plenty of others out there that'll talk it down for you. You know, well, they're the bosses of this game. They've got to talk it up.
I was poorly answering your question, but I'll bring it around to where I was trying to get to. When he spoke about, I take his point that, you know, owners that put in, you know, buy a license for $5 million, you can't then threaten them with relegation. Yeah, but if you sell it the right way, for starters, the second tier competition, you need to have a working party to work out what it is. Now, the problem at the moment, I doubt that's happening up there. You need to set aside some smart people, both in and outside of the sport, and say, okay, what would this second tier look like? How long would we offer the licences for? And I think Peter Philopoulos from Perth Glory has got the best model, where it's the A-League 2, you set it up, you obviously put your tender out for the licences, and you go, okay, it's 5 years. So there's no promotion relegation for 5 years. And you give the clubs a heads up. But on top of that, it's all part of the A-League. This is the problem. We keep viewing this second-tier competition as not being the A-League. It's the A-League. It's the second division of the A-League. You're still in a national competition. You still will have... It's about the FFA getting the media rights, of making sure there is still broadcast. There is all those sort of professional elements of football attached to the second division.
And to an extension to your commentary is when Greg O'Rourke... What raised my eyebrows was when he was making some sort of defence for club owners and their investments, sort of, you know, immunising them against relegation in the future. I mean, what happens when you get relegated is you get reorganised and you try and get promoted to get back in. So yeah. I don't cop that at all. I was a little bit... I'm very circumspect about some of his comments. I think if they try and sell that to the broader public, I think that will fail. And to pick up on your point about Lowy mentioning that the game's fragile, it gets back to not having a roadmap and saying that, yes, in 5 years we will have a second tier. Yes, in 10 years we will have promotion relegation. Not having those goals set in stone that they can sell and build momentum is creating uncertainty.
But Edge, to your point of if he tries to sell it, I mean, I think he is trying to sell it. He's come on a broadcast media and he's sold that line, and it's a matter of how it goes down.
Because it's the company line that was sold to the AFC and FIFA last week, and they didn't really swallow it. But anyway.
No, exactly, and the point that we were making as well was that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, so that the people who were listening to that conversation and will listen to that conversation, who were the foundation of football in this country, will say, well, hang on, what about us? I mean, they springboarded off the work we did. Yeah, we weren't perfect, but, you know, we did create a culture in football in this country, and we did do a pretty good job to get it to the point where the A-League could be created. And I say pretty good job, I mean, financially, no, but, you know, there was a real history there that I don't think was acknowledged in that conversation necessarily.
What is worrying, and this is well above Greg, you know, Greg is obviously the head of the A-League, but, again, it goes back to the board, and there's some clever, smart, wealthy, you know, entrepreneurial people on that board. So what's frustrating is, where is that direction? Where is that roadmap? And I found it interesting that Greg said, you know, we're going to wait for people to come to us. Does the AFL wait for someone to come to them and want to knock on the door? Does the NRL, yeah, where's the strategy? Where's the direction? Where is it? Okay, we want to have a team in Auckland because it's a city, you know, in our part of the world, it's a big city. It's got 1.5 million people. We want a second team in Brisbane because, you know, in the words of David Gallup, we want to fish where the fish are. We want maybe in 10 years' time a second team. But where is the strategy? Just to say, we're just going to wait for Wollongong to knock on our door and hand us a business plan. That's a worry.
Okay, time, casual time.
Yeah, but to wrap up that point, he does have a football pedigree, and we've got to give him time and credit.
I was accused of being the company man last week. Listen to this.
No, we're just not going to whack a bloke that's come on to our show. We've got to make sure that he gets credit where it's
due. To be honest, I'm not sure we're whacking Greg. We're whacking the board that he's working under.
We're just thinking that things
And this comes back. And look, this is a global discussion too on his role, because it's been talked about before when Damon de Boer was in there and he was criticised a lot. But the reality is this head of the A-League is such a toothless job because you're not the CEO of the A-League. You're basically still sitting under a David Gallop, who's the CEO of the wider organisation. And this goes back to the debate about should the A-League be separated from FFA? Because, again, Greg O'Rourke, if he actually had executive powers over the A-League, could actually get things done. But he is, in some ways, fighting with one arm tied behind his back.
Okay, time capsule time, Mark. You're going to give us...
Doing these things.
No, you've got to do this. You've got to do this, because it's all... And Dino's writing this down. We're going to revisit it. Okay, Premier's plate. Who's going to finish top of the table after the regular season?
Let me just ask a question without notice to you guys. I don't understand how you differentiate between who you think is going to win the league and who's going to win the actual grand final. How in your mind do you decipher that?
It's a very clinical...
Because I found it weird, because most of you guys actually chose
approach.
Different... Yeah. Including Simon Hill, chose...
Yeah, a lot of analysis goes into it, a lot of blood, sweat and tears, time and thought, and then you just guess.
Yeah, so just guess, mate. Premier's plate.
Central Coast Mariners.
You idiot.
Come on, please. Come on, be
you
fair,
Dinkum. You absolute goose.
Probably Victory. I think the Victory will get it right again this year.
And then they'll win the grand final. Okay, righto. What about the Player of the Year, the Johnny Warren medalist? Simon Hill chose
Bruno
Rhys Williams.
Fornaroli.
And top goal scorer for the year.
Well, by extension, it almost has to be the same.
I was about to say Bruno Fornaroli.
See, Mark's put a lot of analysis.
Adam Taggart.
Adam Taggart. Ooh, interesting. Okay. There's one.
Actually, I'll take it back. Perth's my tip. Sorry, I forgot about them.
Perth for everything.
I love everything they've done in the off-season.
Perth.
14 homegrown lads, Perth. I've changed.
You've got a bromance with Peter Philopoulos, have you?
I have. Edge, you are punting man, and there's one thing you never do, is it? You don't get off once you got on.
That's right.
So you could end up with egg on your face here, mate.
He's got about 5 selections, and none of them are going to work out.
Absolutely. Anyway. All right. Now, I'm going to chuck this one at you, because this one came across my desk during the course of the week. I didn't see it on your rundown. It was a story about our great mates in Iceland, how they couldn't get a deal done with EA Sports to be involved with FIFA 2017. So they're not going to be in the Euro section of that game, really? Because they refused to accept the low-ball offer that was made to them. They stood by their guns, and then now they're not going to be in
a position. But they're just upset at how low the player ratings were for their players? Was that the issue?
No, they just wanted more dollars.
Really? Okay.
What was the surname that appears in... every...
Son,
yeah.
Edgley Son and
Gilbertson.
Van Ekinson.
So what do they do? They just make it up. I know that used to happen back in the day. If there was like Barcelona wasn't contracted, they just make up the names of the players and they'd be called FC Catalonia or something like that.
Yeah, I think you know a lot more about this game than I. Great son of Iceland, that man. Hey guys, look, it's been a really good show tonight. We're looking forward to the A-League kicking off. We've got Japan next week. We're all most likely going to go to that one, so hopefully
I'll be there.
The Socceroos can get that one done. I'm a little bit nervous about that game. I think even though
forever in our shadow, Japan.
Yeah, well, that's not what they think. They've got a couple of points to prove, and one of them.
The land of the sinking sun.
Yeah, well, hopefully it sinks on.
And we've still got your banners. Yap on.
Yeah, well, we do. But look, so we get this result. So how many points are we on now? 11?
Seven
points. 11, so a 10 if we win this game.
Yep.
Seven plus three is 10, correct? Yep. Just checking the maths.
We're analysts.
No, huge game against Japan. Always the biggest games of these second round of qualification. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, it should be a cracker. And then we wait for how long before the next round of World Cup qualifies after that?
A period of time.
Thailand in November. And you can go to Thailand with a Green and Gold Army.
You can.
Excellent.
GGArmy.com.
You'll be there barracking for Thailand probably, Rob.
I will, because I love everything about Thailand and Thailand football. Thank you, Marco. That's full time on Box to Box. Join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.